are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, February 24th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Bernie strikes gold in the Silver State of Nevada. Meanwhile, never Trumpers, now never Bernieers, and the media freak out. Supreme Court capitulates, covers for Trump, allows a wealth test for immigrants to go forward. Bernie Sanders briefed that Russia is trying to boost his campaign. Trump's too, but now Trump's denying it. Meanwhile, he dumps the director of national intelligence and replaces him with a right-wing Twitter troll. Incidentally, Trump also has an administration hit list. Meanwhile, the commander in creep is in India being feted by a fascistic Modi.
Gotta be tough.
Gotta be really tough. Kennedy and Markey in a tight race in Massachusetts, according to polls. First time that a Kennedy would be in a tight race in a primary in Massachusetts, if you can believe it.
Let's go, Markey.
Indeed. Supreme Court to decide same-sex foster care question, apparently. And a federal court declares Medicaid work regulations illegal. EPA is pushing for more mercury in the air.
Cool.
And Trump hoping that a do-nothing strategy is best for dealing with a growing coronavirus potential pandemic. All this and more on today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Welcome back from our vacation. As you can tell, maybe from the sound of my voice, I had a cold the entire time, but I also threw out my back and could not get my kid to go to so-called ski school at the chintzy-ass mountain we were at until the last day when he's like, I really like it.
What? Ski school is awesome.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I should have had you talk to Saul about it because he refused to go for the first day. So I spent the whole day on the bunny hill teaching him to snowboard. Meanwhile, Mile is mad at me because she's got no one to snowboard with. But somehow, I don't know if it's Instagram or what, no matter where she is, she ends up finding friends she knows. And then a day two, Saul wouldn't even get out of the car. So we sat in the parking lot for an extended period of time while Mila snowboarded. And day three, he finally decided to go, and he loved it. And there was nobody else there because nobody else had vacation. So it was just him and some 15-year-old dude who was teaching him to snowboard. And he was so Saul was in like six-and-a-half-year-old kid heaven.
You got a private lesson.
Indeed, for like 3 hours. And then he's like, oh, I'll do more of it. I'm like, well, guess what? We're done.
No, he'll know for next time.
Yes, I am willing to bet you everything I own that he will forget that. But that is exactly what I said to him. And he's like, well, if I get a 15-year-old, I'll do it. He's at the age where, like, boys his age, they get crushes on like, other teenage boys.
Teenagers are cool.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm telling him. Like, there's nobody else who's teaching the ski school. They're not bringing in, you know, this guy just came from the Olympics and now he's going to teach beginners 6-year-old snowboarders. That's not happening. So
I'm still intimidated by how cool teenagers are.
Yeah. Well, believe me, I go through it every day. There's like the whole pack of them at my house now all the time. And now I feel bad because it seems like less people are snowboarding. And I thought that I would, you know, I switched to snowboarding so that my kids would, you know, be cool. And now,
yeah, snowboarding's cooler, but skiing's easier to get started up.
It feels like everybody skis now. I don't know. But also, folks, I rarely do this, but if you know of a good physical therapist in Brooklyn, please email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com because I now have like some weird sciatica thing going down like my right hip.
That's new?
No, I had the old one on my left buttock, but that more or less went away.
It migrated.
And now, no, I have it. I know the moment it migrated was I was reaching, like it was even before I started snowboarding. It was literally, I was reaching for a heavy vase on a top shelf. I say vase now because of Bloomberg.
It's a picture of my future.
It's a picture of everybody's future. I got news for you. That's what people don't realize. You always think, like, it's not going to be me, the guy. Like, and I remember when people would say to me, like, older people were like, ugh, I broke my hip. How? I opened a car door. Or I opened a cabinet, and then my hip broke. So a lot went on, obviously, the past week. If you did not catch my debate wrap-up, which I did, it was a low-tech version. The quality of the audio is not fantastic. It's just me talking. Also on YouTube, you can see the debate analysis I did in real time. I did debate coverage. I'm going to try and put that up, but it was the audio quality I thought was dismal. I got to double-check it. But I will put it up for members in the member feed. But if you want to go to YouTube, you can find it there too.
People like that real DIY aesthetic.
It was very DIY. I learned a piece of software in the 45 minutes. I put Saul to bed and then I ran into my room, put up a sheet.
Brooklinen sheet, I assume.
It was actually, I think, a Brooklinen sheet. I should have branded that. I forgot. Then I learned that OBS thing is pretty easy. So, all right, let's get into this. Bernie Sanders had a rally in San Antonio, which I believe must have been, was it the next night in Nevada? What day was it? I think it was the day after Nevada. And I don't know that he gave a victory speech in Nevada. Did he? Oh, this was on. Oh, this was on Saturday. Oh, okay. So this is a couple of days after Nevada.
Yeah. This is,
wait.
Saturday was the day of the caucus.
Oh God. Oh God. Someone help me. I have no idea what day it is today. Okay. So Saturday night, Bernie headed to Texas. Now, this is relevant for a couple of reasons. Bernie probably feels at this point that he is a lock may be too strong of a word, but he's got a very, very good shot in California to win big in California. Texas was Biden's second firewall, if you will. The first being South Carolina. The second was Texas. Texas, for Biden, was the place where he was going to mitigate Bernie Sanders running away with California. But the Sanders campaign clearly believes that that's not going to happen now, or that at the very least, there's a very good chance that Bernie may not win Texas, although he could. The last polling I saw, and this was from a month ago, I think, had him within 5 points. He could either win Texas at this point, or at the very least, split delegates with Biden and prevent Biden, essentially nullifying Biden's attempt to cut into his numbers in California. Now, a month ago, you know, nobody was even talking about Bloomberg. Who knows where Bloomberg stands in any of this now, because he was so devastated in that debate. We'll talk a little bit more about the debate later in the program, too. But if you go back and look at my recap, the too long don't read is Warren did a great job for her going in on Bloomberg in particular. In many respects, it shows the deficiency of her campaign. I mean, I don't want people to get freaked out about my saying that. From my perspective, it was frustrating because that is the Warren who should have showed up the first or second debate against Joe Biden. And anybody who says, like, well, we saw what happened to Kamala Harris because of her going after Biden. The problem with Kamala Harris going after Biden was what happened in the days that followed. She basically said, I have the same policy as Biden. The one thing that Elizabeth Warren knows better than anyone on that stage is about the financial crisis and about things like the bankruptcy bill and whatnot. She could have gone in on Biden and gone after him for an extended period of time. Her campaign advisors told her to do some other, you know, ridiculous stuff over the course of the coming weeks and months. And frankly, you know, for me, Warren showed last night what Warren should have been throughout this campaign. And I think, you know, in Nevada, it was certainly too late for her because half the people had already voted. I think Pete Buttigieg would have been completely decimated. Klobuchar would have been completely decimated. I don't think it would have come out of Sanders, frankly, at that point. Because I think, again, that just appealed to, you know, and I think it's going to be too late for her across the board because she doesn't have the infrastructure. And frankly, the fact that it took that long to get to where she got was indicative of some of the reservations I have about her as a candidate in the general election. But we don't need to go into that.
Her political instincts are not the best.
That's honestly what I think it is. And I think, frankly, I think if Sanders felt differently about her political instincts a year and a half ago, I'm not even sure he would have run.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But
I talked about it with Michael the week before last, too. I don't know. I mean, he acts like I'm being naive for ever having liked her. But she had a lot of credibility going into this that she sacrificed for not a lot in return. And I'm like legit sad about it. But she could still redeem herself by dropping out and endorsing Bernie before she loses her own state on Super Tuesday.
Yeah, I don't know that she's going to do that, frankly. But
like we said, she has bad instincts.
I think there is a lot of jeopardy involved in her staying in for Super Tuesday for Massachusetts. But I think we'll get a better sense of what she's going to do after South Carolina. But put that aside. In the debate, Sanders did exactly what he should be. He came off as the front runner and he basically was above the fray. He took a couple whacks at Bloomberg as well. Bloomberg turns out to be a bit of a paper tiger. And now we know why he has been avoiding the debates, although, you know, we knew that beforehand as well. And so the debate tomorrow night is going to be nuts, I think, because you're going to see Warren do that again. And Bloomberg is going to think that he's prepared for this one. And I got news for you. He won't be. But we will talk more about that. So Bernie Sanders on Saturday night, following his win in Nevada, heads to Texas and gives this speech in San Antonio, which I think could be the best speech that he has given. A non-policy based speech, you know, in terms of just like a campaign rally speech. And he is pivoting in some respects to the general election strategy. Now, generally, what we've seen in the past, and even in 2016, we didn't see this quite as much, but you have someone who pivots from the left to the right. But the thing that I think is really, and we're going to get into this when we play all the clips of the freakouts that are happening, particularly on MSNBC. That's where most people see them. Their understanding of what right and left are is wrong. Their understanding of how I think the electorate views this race is wrong. It's wrong in so many different ways. But we will get to that specifically there. But what Sanders does here at this rally in San Antonio, and he does it coming off of Nevada, which has been so far the most diverse electorate that the Democrats have faced in a primary, and probably is, you know, more or less about as diverse as you can get. And Sanders won in virtually every single cohort. In fact, the only cohort that he didn't win that was significant was above age 65. And it's a big cohort. It's the biggest age cohort that there is. He did not win that one. But in every other cohort, it doesn't matter in terms of you break it down in terms of gender, if you break it down in terms of if you break it down in terms of union, non-union, if you break it down in terms of Latino or Black or Caucasian or Asian.
It's a rainbow coalition.
It really is. And here he is going after Donald Trump and fusing his attacks on Donald Trump with a call for justice across the various planes of our existence within society.
We are going to win across the country because the American people are sick and tired of a president who lies all of the time. They are sick and tired of a corrupt administration. They are sick and tired of a president who is undermining American democracy, who thinks he is above the law, and who apparently has never read the Constitution in this country. The American people are sick and tired of a government which is based on greed, corruption, and lies. They want an administration which is based on the principles of justice, economic justice, social justice, racial justice, and environmental justice. Now, Trump and his friends think they are going to win this election. They think they're going to win this election by dividing our people up based on the color of their skin or where they were born, or their religion, or their sexual orientation. We are going to win because we are doing exactly the opposite. We're bringing our people together.
And that's and we'll have more of that speech to play. But that's more or less how he starts out. And it expresses what they were able to do in Nevada. Here is just the this is the Washington Post entrance polls. You know, not 100% you know, accurate, whatnot, but it gives you a rounding out things. And they break it down. Groups that candidates are winning by 6 or more percentage points. Ages 17 to 29. This is all the ones that Sanders won. 17 to 29 plus 54. Plus 54 percentage points. Preferred candidates who agrees with you on issues, plus 42. Independents or something else, plus 37. Hispanic Latino, plus 34%. This is by how much they won. By how much they won.
A huevo.
Support changing to a single government health plan, 33%. Ages 30 to 44, 33%. Very liberal, 32%. Other, 30%. I'm not even sure other what. Top issue, income inequality, won by 22%. First-time caucus goers, won by 22%. No college degree, won by 22%. Men, won by 21%. Top issue, healthcare, won by 19%. Decided before the last few days, won by 18%. Not a union household, 17%. Union household, remember, one of the biggest unions in the country got into a huge fight with him. Won it by 13%. Or I should say the biggest unions in Nevada. Women won by 13%. Top issue, climate change, won by 12%. Somewhat liberal, won by 12%. Democrats, won by 10%. College graduates, won by 10%. Ages 45 to 64, won by 10%. White, won by 10%. Attended previous caucus, won by 9%. Now, Biden won black folk by 12%. He won ages 65 and older by 10%. Opposing changing a single health care plan by 6%.
But he's so divisive, though.
Who, Biden?
Bernie.
Oh, Bernie. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is he just cleaned up across the board. Like I say, the one that he lost was people over the age of 65. We will get into that later in the program because I got a good thread from somebody that I thought was actually pretty good and worth reading about them explaining to their parents why Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, but it's cheating when people talk to their parents.
Who said that? You're not supposed to do that?
I've seen some like really bad Galaxy Brain Centers takes on Twitter like, all you young Latinos who talked to your parents about Bernie Sanders, that's cheating.
It's just bizarre, the level of desperation that's involved in this. And it's encouraging on some level, because you would think at this point, if the kitchen sink was somehow like in somebody's vault, they would have brought it out and thrown it at Sanders.
Wait, did you hear that Bernie said something positive about Cuba?
I did hear that.
That's... Oh, no. All those Cuban Americans who were totally going to vote for a Democrat aren't now.
The Oppo has arrived.
The Oppo has arrived. Now, of course, we've got the debate coming tomorrow night. Before we go, I got to do some ads. But before we get there, just want you to know that Michael Bloomberg is practicing for this debate this time, by all accounts. We have some inside footage. Can't say where we got this, but you probably, if you look carefully, you can see we got it from Twitter. Inside footage of Michael Bloomberg testing out a new campaign slogan. Here it is. And for some reason, in his debate prep, he had everybody dress like they were from the cast of Mary Poppins. And he was playing the role of a nanny. And here it is.
I'll tell you where I'm going. First, Iowa, then New Hampshire. Maybe I can get the whole country to behave.
A lot of people wish they could have just left him hanging up there and
such a
turn off
video.
The lights. You know what's amazing about that? It's such a perfect metaphor because it's not that he you know, I think the low hanging fruit is obviously that he thinks he's the nanny, but he doesn't. He thinks that he honestly is some type of demigod, some type of form of deity, and that he is amongst us. And like, you know, maybe I just got this on the mind between doing Harry Potter with Saul and also reading this big Greek mythology book with him for like a 3 months we were reading it. I think he feels like he has an obligation as a deity to help the mortals. But of course they're mortals. So it's not like they don't get to have a lot of free will. And, you know, it's his responsibility as a deity to do these things. So he does feel some obligation to the mortals, but not significant one. And we have video of him talking about Medicaid that I think is the most disturbing thing that you can see. Like talk about shark eyes. This guy, and if you take that frame and you look at every video that it's put out there and every comment that he's made, if you just for a moment, that leaves your mouth agape, if you just for a moment just presume that Bloomberg thinks he is a deity and that he has an obligation to people to do stuff for them as one would a deity to the mortal people.
Or a nanny to children.
Right, but nanny almost implies like you're hired and like you're a surrogate. He thinks he's the whole kit and caboodle. And so I think it's very, very telling. We'll play that clip in a bit. First, I want to get to this. The first thing I did when I came in today was to search our boxes of Liquid IV to see if we had that Liquid IV. They call it the energy multiplier. It's a matcha. It's like a matcha tea thing they have. It is, many people talk about daily fatigue. I have it, you know, when I come in and I've had the cold, I want to get like a little bit of a boost, but I don't want to drink one of those junky drinks. Their Liquid IV energy multiplier gives you sustained energy throughout the day. It's a great all natural alternative to those processed energy drinks. The premium matcha and green energy blend tastes delicious. It provides a lasting energy boost throughout the day. Maybe over the past couple of weeks, you've seen it occasionally like I have a green bottle of water. Then I pour it into my glass. It's like a couple of cups of coffee without the crash. Liquid IV's energy multiplier contains the mixture of teas and herbs that are high in antioxidants. They help improve mood and focus without any artificial flavors or preservatives. The cellular transport technology, I don't know what that means, but it works. Delivers enhanced rapid absorption into the bloodstream. It gives you a boost fast. It's non-GMO. It's vegan. It's free of gluten, dairy, and soy. Free of all of it. Here is the saddest part of that story that I started. I got here. I had used it all. Gotta get more. We have the other flavors, and I took a hit of that. And that's good because it keeps me hydrated. Particularly, I feel like in the wake of a cold, I'm dehydrated. But I'm not saying I got addicted to that matcha thing. They probably don't want that out there. But I love that stuff. Hint, hint, if you're listening, Liquid IV. Get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com. Use the code MajorityRep. MajorityRep at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order on Liquid IV's website. Just go to liquidiv.com, enter the promo code MajorityRep to save 25% and get better hydration and energy. And folks, remember, these comes in little packets. So you can travel on the plane with these things. You can put them in your backpack, carry them around, get some water, drop it in. Super easy. Much better way of doing it. Don't wait. Start fueling your adventures today. Meanwhile, postage rates have gone up again. Thankfully, stamp.com eases the pain with big discounts off of post office retail rates. Stamps.com, you save 5 cents off of every first-class stamp and up to 40% off of shipping rates. Now, when you get a small business, maybe you're selling merch, which we got the merch coming soon. I kid you not, we got samples on the way. We're all union made, right? All union made. and it's going to be on palm leaf. All of our shirts are made out of palm leaf. No, that's not true. That kind of savings really adds up, folks. When you're doing a small business or whatnot, if you're doing, Film Guy Matthew sending out all his eBay stuff. Since Stamps.com is completely online, it saves time and money. Anything you can do at the post office, you can do at Stamps.com. You personally print official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, any package, any class of mail for anywhere in the world. Once your mail is ready, you just drop it in a mailbox. With Stamps.com, you get discounted postage rates. You can't even get the post office. They must buy bulk. That's what it is, big time. It's a fraction of the cost of those expensive postage meters. There's no equipment to lease, no long-term commitments. It's no wonder over 700,000 small businesses already use Stamps.com. Right now, listeners get a special offer that includes a four-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Majority Report. At Stamps.com, enter the coupon code Majority Report. And lastly, I've said this a million times before, you may not need to hire right now, but the best time to look for someone is when you don't need to hire somebody. You don't want a situation where you get your 2 weeks' notice or whatever. Maybe someone doesn't give you the 2 weeks' notice. Maybe you've been a jerk and you haven't deserved it or whatnot. But you wanna be able to reach out to people that you have contacted already. And as you know, around here, election year, we're going to hire a president. Well, you could talk about how tough it is to determine who is qualified. Even if you research each political candidate, we've done that here. We've already figured out who it is, Bernie. But thankfully, every role is not this difficult to fill, especially when there's ZipRecruiter. Today, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. What ZipRecruiter does is they send your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites, but they don't stop there. They have some type of matching technology. ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right skills and experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You can even add the screening questions for your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. When are they going to contact me to talk about my ZipRecruiter story? I should be in every one of their ads across the board. That's how we got Brendan. It was awesome. We got a lot of different candidates. I interviewed a lot of really quality people. Brendan was honestly, if I had constructed Brendan in a laboratory, I don't think that he would have been better than what ZipRecruiter did.
Wow.
Yeah. Talk about Michael Bloomberg thinking he's a deity. Hey, try ZipRecruiter for free. My listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. How do you spell majority, Sam?
MAJORITY.
I had to think about that. ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter, it's the smartest way to hire. All right, so let's get back into this. Bernie Sanders won big in Nevada. That was when basically the crap hit the fan. I mean, we saw the crap hitting the fan. You know what? First, we're going to do is the roundup. A lot of news we missed the last week. I'm going to do this very quickly. I'm going to do it in like 3 minutes. A bunch of stories. You ready? This is going to go quick, folks. All right, here we go. Supreme Court on Monday said it's going to take up a dispute between the city of Philadelphia and a Catholic charity over the suitability of same-sex parents to provide foster care. Right? Right? Can you believe we're having this argument? Now, the issue is about so-called religious freedom. How much can a... Now, obviously, a Catholic church can discriminate, say, like, you know, only Catholics can be priests. But if they're doing something that is not religious, like being an adoption agency, can they discriminate based upon their beliefs? Like, in other words, if they can do it to same-sex couples, why couldn't they say, like, oh, we don't think mixed-race couples. We're not into that either. That's against our religion.
Yeah, I mean, they could.
Well, not up until now, because this is a 30-year-old decision that has been decided at the Supreme Court, that in that function they can't. This Supreme Court may have something different to say about it. Meanwhile, an appeals court on Friday, the D.C. Circuit Court, go back and listen to what we've talked about the D.C. Circuit Court. That was a court that it was Harry Reid's getting rid of the filibuster that allowed the Democrats to make sure that that court was filled with Democratic-leaning appointees. Second most important court in the country. Three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit ruled that Trump's health officials had been arbitrary and capricious in allowing Arkansas to launch a Medicaid program called Arkansas Works 2 years ago, which required a job requirement to get Medicaid. D.C. Circuit, the 19-page opinion was written by a jurist appointed by Ronald Reagan. The panel's other judges, an appointee of Barack Obama and one appointed by Jimmy Carter. Why do I tell you that? Because when you think about the 180 judges that that Trump has appointed on the federal judiciary, know that they will be there for 40 years. Jimmy Carter left office in 1980, folks. 1980. And one of his judges just kept Trump from imposing a work requirement on Medicaid. Meanwhile, this is good news for those of you who want to see it all go away. Four of the warmest Januaries have occurred since 2016. You do the math. So far, this winter has been one of the warmest on record for much of the United States. Obviously, a tremendous amount of bad effects ranging from like ticks that you couldn't even believe. That didn't exist in Maine now. I mean, it's going to happen all across the country.
Meanwhile, did ride my bike to work today, though, so that was nice.
Yeah, enjoy it while it lasts, folks. In eastern Kentucky, has been completely underwater for the past couple of weeks. Central Appalachia has experienced catastrophic flooding once again in the first 2 weeks of February. More than 8 inches of water fell, causing Cumberland and Kentucky rivers to reach their highest level in 40 years. More than 200 homes have been damaged. Nearly 100 more have been devastated. There have been more than 100 high water rescues. Meanwhile, over the break, a National Association of Federal Judges was playing around with calling an emergency meeting to address growing concerns about the intervention of Justice Department officials and Donald Trump in politically sensitive cases. Also, this is great. Greyhound will no longer consent to warrantless searches by Border Patrol agencies. They announced on Friday it's stopped allowing ICE agents to conduct warrantless immigration checks aboard its buses. Greyhound had previously said it believed federal law required them to comply with border agents' request to board his buses, regardless of whether they had warrants or not. That was a practice that began to ramp up in 2018. In a statement, Greyhound now says it will tell the Department of Homeland Security, under which a CBP falls, that it will no longer assent to warrantless searches of private areas of its company, including buses, terminals, and company offices. They plan to develop training to ensure drivers and other employees follow the new policy. Send them an email.
Hell yeah.
Go on Twitter and just say congratulations and thank you.
Definitely. Did you see?
A little late, but it should have happened.
Did you see the story about the bus driver, the Greyhound bus driver, who told the ICE agent to gargle his balls?
No, I did not, but I would like, we should look that up and play that. I would like to see that.
Hero.
Meanwhile, EPA is about to change a rule that cuts mercury pollution, or I should say, change a rule that had cut mercury pollution. Listen to this. Exelon, one of the nation's largest utilities, told the EPA that its effort to change a rule to cut emissions of mercury and other toxins is, quote, an action that is entirely unnecessary, unreasonable, and universally opposed by the power generation sector. In other words, the companies that this regulation was imposed upon to cut mercury, a neurotoxin, in our air, is coming out and saying, don't roll back the rules. We don't want you to.
closest planet to the sun.
I've been feeling a little too sane lately. Kathy, I get the Hatter disease.
Exactly. Kathy Robertson, a senior management for environmental policy at the group, said the industry long ago complied with the rule, and it works. The sector has gotten so much cleaner as a result of this rule. First off, digest this part of the story, but also remember every time industry complains about one of these rules, it's going to destroy them, which they all did when the Obama administration rolled this out. They're full of it. Despite a course of opposition from unions, business groups, and electric utilities, EPA is on the verge of finalizing its proposal as a broader effort to overhaul how the government calculates the health benefits of cleaner air. Coal executives have lobbied for it, arguing it represented one of the worst excesses of what President Trump calls the war on coal. The agency plans to declare, one more time here, that it's not appropriate and necessary for the government to limit harmful pollutants from power plants, even though every utility in America has complied with its standards put in place in 2011 under Obama. While it will technically keep existing restrictions on mercury in place, it means the government will not be able to count collateral benefits, such as reducing soot and smog when it sets limits on air toxic pollutants. In other words, they do a balancing test. They find the benefits on one side and the detriments on the other side. The detriments are always economic. Okay, which, fine. I mean, you know, the safest speed for us to drive would be about 5 miles an hour, but there's detriments to that. You don't get to places on time and whatnot. But what they're doing is they take this scale and they see where it ends up. Things like how many cancers does it cause? You know, what's it doing to the environment? Is on the benefit side. How much does it cost is on the detriment side. What they're doing is they're taking a couple of categories off the benefit side and putting it on the side. And that's basically it. And that, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, and lastly, let's just do this one since we're here. We're going to have to talk more about this as we go forward. The CDC insisted on being left out of a press release when the State Department and the Trump administration overrode them about flying 14 Americans with the coronavirus back from the country. I think they were in Japan. So you have the Trump administration overruling the CDC. Why are they doing that? Story in the Washington Post. President Trump has lavished praise on President Xi Jinping for his handling of the growing coronavirus outbreak, a posture some in his administration are growing increasingly uncomfortable with. Why are they going? Because they're concerned about China's lack of transparency and the handling of the epidemic, worries about rattled financial markets and their effect on the economy, as well as delicate negotiations with China over trade deal, a key to Trump's reelection, have played a large role in influencing the president's friendly posture toward China over the deadly coronavirus. What are the implications of this? U.S. and international health experts have for weeks expressed concern that China's not been fully transparent about the breadth of the outbreak and that a crackdown on doctors who tried to sound the alarm in December. U.S. officials still do not have the information they repeatedly asked for from China, which some have argued warrants a tougher line from the United States. Why do you think they want this information? Because they're trying to figure out how it spreads and how to prevent it from spreading. So far, the U.S. has 15 confirmed cases, though officials have warned they expect to see more on Sunday. The director of the U.S. National of Allergy and Infectious Diseases told the Washington Post that 44 Americans who were traveling on the Diamond Princess cruise in Japan have been infected. Although the United States so far effectively contained the virus, some senior administration officials said there have been tensions within the administration over what information the president should receive, his posture towards China, and what a message to send to the American public. Several officials said there's been too much focus on evacuating Americans overseas and too little on what to do if the epidemic spreads within the United States. In other words, Trump doesn't want to rattle the markets, so he's basically shutting down the U.S. response to this. Folks, this could be a real problem in the next coming months. A real, real problem. And with that said, that is our roundup of the news.
Don't sleep on those flu shots either, folks.
Yeah, well, the flu shots...
Flu kills way more people than coronavirus in this country.
That's true.
Who knows if the flu shot this year was geared toward coronavirus.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't. And my understanding is that the efficacy of the flu shot this year was pretty low as it goes, which is around 40%, 45%. That's still... It's much better situation to protect you 4 out of 10 times that you would otherwise get it.
Can you imagine, like, China, I do believe, is better at enforcing quarantines than the United States. Can you imagine all the people who would just be forced to go to work with coronavirus in this country?
Not only is that a problem. Not only is there is like no, I do not believe for a moment that there's anybody even thinking about what they would do with a policy about that. There's been no talk about, like, we don't know what's happening in China. Supposedly, they may be starting to get it contained or not. But we get a lot of our vaccines from China. We get a lot of our iPhones.
We get a lot of our everything.
I have a relative who's in medical inventory, and talking to them about this, it's not to get too paranoid, but they're saying, like, we're, like, low on masks. We can't get anything out of that country, so we're running low on this stuff. And, like, that's the communication is we're not able to get the medical supplies that we expect.
Yes, and so there's no planning without knowing what's happening there. We can't get on it, but Trump is afraid that it will hurt his reelection chances. It's a scary story. I'm going to be interviewing somebody hopefully on Ring of Fire this week about that dynamic. And if I'm able to get the person I want to get, I'll let you know about it and check it out and we'll get into that. All right. Let's briefly just get to the Sanders freakout because we'll play more clips as we go. But I got one really interesting Twitter thread that I don't know how I came across it, but let's play, I don't know, of all the freakouts here, which one do you think is the... Yeah, this is pretty good. Look, reporters are human beings. They have preferences for candidates. I can understand that. I don't think there's anything bad about that. I think they've got to do their best to be objective. And I think you've got to have a mix of reporters so that at the very least, you know, the product you put out at the end of the day has some form of balance, right? I mean, we're not a news organization here. We aggregate the news and I'm a news reader, but we're pretty upfront with, with, you know, who we support. And I think, you know, you could get away with doing that, too. I mean, it's quite apparent that they don't have any Sanders supporters at MSNBC. I think I might be the only paid contributor who I think is, like, clearly a supporter of Sanders or even maybe, like, even, you know, I think they may have maybe some people who come on who are supporters of Warren. I'm not 100% sure about that. But here is a report, and I'm not sure who it is. Chris Jansen. She's a perfectly nice person. I've met her there. She seemed perfectly nice. She is on the ground in a Nevada caucus and reporting on and Bernie Sanders won Latino voters by 51%. That's how much he won by. She's at a caucus and apparently either Chris Jansen wanted someone else to win the Latino support or is just exhausted at reporting about Latinos.
Largely people of color, of those, the majority are Latino, and they are clearly, at least from eyeballing it, strongly in favor of Bernie Sanders with Joe Biden coming in second.
On the one hand, I think it's possible she could be exhausted. But on the other hand, isn't it part of your job to know what kind of, you know, spin you're putting on the words that you're saying?
I think you got to have a little bit more self-awareness to be able to say, like, I mean, maybe you could be tired. But at that point, you go like, I'm here at this convention, you know, this thing, caucus. And then say, and it's mostly Latinos, and like, they're supporting Bernie Sanders.
That was like a Michael sigh.
Yeah, that was a huge Michael sigh. That was like, maybe somebody said off mic to like, Chris, what are you wearing?
Adidas jacket?
Yeah. Wasn't there some group that announced their who won and they were mocking that? Do we have that audio of, I mean, this type of freak out, it's consistent with what we've seen, and at least she didn't, you know, mean to editorialize.
She didn't say anything racist.
Right. I mean, at least
I feel like people will start doing that the more we see people of color voting for Bernie.
Right. I mean, at least she didn't go like, oh,
I'm not racist, I'm just disappointed.
This is going to make Nevada very hostile to everybody who, you know, or something like that, or there could be mass shootings, or, you know, something to that effect. But this became a bit of a meme, and some members of a, guess it was a caucus that was announcing or who won their caucus, decided to turn it into a bit of a joke. And here it comes. It's going to come in a moment. But this is going across the board. I mean, I can tell you that I went out to dinner. Well, here is everybody announcing it at, this is at a, this is some, caucus and, with, I think some, casino workers, cause it's being held in a hotel. Here it is. This is, and who's texting this out? Who's tweeting it out? Anila, Mieja. Okay, here we go. Bernie won that one.
Hell yeah. They're funny.
But I will tell you this. I have, you know, most of the people I come into contact with when I go out, you know, unless it's, you know, like good friends, like when I go out peripherally, right? Like, you know, a friend of a friend's birthday party or something like that, or, you know, or people who are like a little bit older than me. You know, where I'm going to like my cousin's, you know, grandparent, that type of thing. These are people who are sort of like very mainstreamy Democrats. They probably in the past have expressed like some concern that Bernie Sanders can't win this and that. Not super hostile, but not, you know, PMOCs or whatever. And the number of those people who have said to me in the past month and a half, 2 months, what's going on with MSNBC? I can't even watch it anymore. It's all Republicans. And I'm like, it's been like this for 3 years. But I think to a certain extent, once impeachment ended, some of this is coming out. And this is a dynamic that I talked about during the Bush administration, where like it was very hard when everybody was against Bush. It was very hard to know that people you know, were your allies were actually, their politics were very different. And I think even for these folks who are the prime targets audience for MSNBC, I think there's a lot of people sort of waking up and going like, hey, wait a second. What? And, it's creating a very interesting dynamic.
Well, usually that kind of unifying force just leads to the sort of moderate or centrist or whatever you want to call it being on top. But we're at a weird point now where it actually says these guys should fall in line behind Bernie.
I mean, it's going to be weird. It's going to be weird because all of a sudden two values are going to come into conflict for a lot of these people, which is, Trump is the greatest threat to our democracy in our lifetime. And wait a second. I don't want somebody who's actually on the left to be president. And it's going to be interesting to see how they navigate it.
It's going
to
be so good.
But I would also say to people, it is very important in my mind. I mean, you look, people do whatever they want. But I personally will tell you how I'm going to behave in this situation. And part of it is, pull up this clip number 10. Bernie Sanders, it's not over. It is not over. And people should get out there and knock on as many doors as possible, and they should be phone banking. It is not over.
He needs to win it outright so they can't pull anything at the convention.
There is no doubt in my mind. Jamie is absolutely right. If Bernie Sanders is up by double digits going in, if it's, you know, he's got 33% of the vote or more, and then his nearest competitor has 23%, no way. I do not believe there is any way in hell, no matter how much money Michael Bloomberg has or whatever, or anybody will get that nomination. A, they'd be an idiot to accept it because they're going to lose. And B, anybody who cares about the Democratic Party would be an idiot to push for something like that because it's going to destroy the Democratic Party. And frankly, I believe they're smart enough to not do that. What they would rather do is allow Bernie to lose in the general election. And we can talk about that later. But if you want a little example, see Martha Coakley in her run against Scott Brown about 8 years ago, 10 years ago. She was from Western Massachusetts. Massachusetts is an old boy network. They basically said, we're going home, guys. Good luck, Martha. And see how that goes. Put that aside. The point is that Sanders has, I don't know what Nate Silver would say, but I think probably 80 to 90% chance of winning right now by those 10 points. If it's like 3 or 4 points, it's quite possible it goes to a second round and maybe they think they can get away with it. I mean, it's certainly within the rules. I mean, that's the way it's set up. But it's got to be close for them to even contemplate it, unless they're completely insane, in which case, forget about it. The point being, the thing to do now is to work as hard as you can for Sanders to make sure he has that type of lead, but also to be aware that you don't get extra points for being right about something. You know, you can feel good about it, but if you're going to put, and when I say you, I'm talking about what I'm going to do. And I'm just giving a version of how people can behave to build upon this, to be strategic. Crapping on candidates, particularly ones that are closest and most likely to become Sanders supporters sooner rather than later, is unstrategic at best and petty and dumb. And then I'll have a whole list of words for it after that. Here's an example of why that's the case. This is Future Bird on Twitter. She put this up, she posted this just yesterday.
That's my Elizabeth Warren sign. It's hanging in our apartment, and I think it's really cool because all of the people in these big apartments here could see it. But, as promised, I'm going to take it down now. This is sad for me. I still like Elizabeth Warren. But listen, we've got to win. And I thought that by now Liz Warren would have a lot more support from minority voters. And I thought that by now she would be a little bit more in the lead and that maybe she would have won over some of these stubborn moderates. But after seeing the way that Bernie's reached out to Latino voters in Nevada, I'm feeling a lot more optimistic about him being able to win. The thing is, we're all going to have to work together to make that happen. It's going to be all hands on deck. We can't let our feelings get in the way.
And that goes both ways, right? That goes both ways.
I've been saying.
It's one thing, indeed. It's one thing to go after, MSNBC hosts or media figures. It's another, at this point, to go too hard, particularly at candidates whom for whom their support comes from people where Bernie is number two. You want to bring those people on. You want to be strategic.
I don't know who you could possibly be talking about.
I'm talking about a whole slew of people. A whole slew of people that I see. I mean, I'm just, and it's a general type of thing, too. I mean, in general, like, you know, this is not about you. Remember, not me, us is the point. A lot of people need to be thinking about that, particularly now going forward. Be strategic.
Be a happy warrior.
Indeed. All right. So lastly, the other the big cohort that Bernie Sanders lost in Nevada, he lost African-Americans by about 10 points, but he came in second. He got crushed with people over the age of 65. And so one of the things that you should be doing is talking to your parents. I know some of you are the parents in this situation. but many of you have parents who are over the age of 65. I saw this great tweet. I have no idea who this kid is. He's not a kid. This guy, Eric Kingsbury, on Twitter. I don't know who he is. I don't even know how I saw it. But he wrote, full disclosure, I'm an older millennial, born in 1988. Now, I only stop here because it took me about, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes to recover from that. Because that's when I graduated college.
Yeah, he's exactly the age of millennial that I am.
There you go. That to me is a little bit upsetting. But I got past that. A white college-educated guy and a Warren supporter. I was a tepid Hillary supporter in 2016 primary in general, but my sympathies have always been on the left. Still, I'm a New Deal liberal, not a Democratic socialist. So my boomer father asks, why does Bernie have so much appeal? Simply, the complete failure of the previous generations to reckon with the crisis they caused and perpetuated have left the young people very, very angry. Just in the last 20 years, I've seen people who are supposed to know what they were doing and do the right thing fail over and over again, starting with the Supreme Court discrediting itself in the 2000 election, and then intelligence failures leading to 9/11 and Iraq. I would quibble with the idea of intelligence failures, but I mean, let's read it broadly. There's some of these things I will quibble with, but so what? This is what I'm talking about in terms of attitude. Keep the eyes on the prize. And then Katrina, and then the financial crisis, and the housing crisis, and the student debt crisis, and now the election of, and then acquittal of Donald Trump. There are many more crises and failures I could add in there too. And that's ignoring rampant inequality, the continuation of policies that treat people of color as second-class citizens, the war on voting rights and democracy more generally, and the refusal to even acknowledge the existential threat to humanity that is climate change. People who are supposed to be the serious and sober experts, the elites, have failed again and again, and now a large movement of people are in thrall of an ideology that pretty much boils down to a, quote, F you to the suggestion they listen or compromise with those same elites. Over the last 40 years, there have been opportunities to address these issues, most of which are not partisan, with a small ball or moderate solution. They could have turned the ship of state 5 degrees at a time, which over decades ends up being huge, but they didn't. That is true. That is true. We would be at above a $15 minimum wage at this point had they simply continued to raise it with inflation. I mean, just as one example. Or we could be way ahead of where we are with emission standards. We could be way ahead on just all sorts of different things.
Climate.
I mean, just across the board. And now we're left in a place where young people are tired of waiting and believe we must make dramatic changes all at once because we didn't make small tweaks over time. This is especially true with climate, where the science suggests catastrophe without massive efforts. Bernie's, in quote, revolution, and to a lesser extent, Warren's appeal, is mainly premised on exhaustion with the status quo that has failed to address crisis after crisis with even half measures. Sanders has the additional appeal of being viewed as an outsider who is not a capitalist. This is genuinely a crisis, and I don't think older people on the center-left or those in the D.C. NYC elite have really grappled with how much of a role they've played in getting us here. Compromise is foundational to democracy, and a large, angry constituency is turning against it. There was thought that Trump's election might wake people from their complacency, but even the hashtag resistance is only pining for a return to the, quote, good old days of the early Obama administration, which still saw a failure to address so many of the structural issues plaguing America. Parens, and I say this as someone who agrees almost entirely with what the Obama administration did from 09 to 11. I can quibble with a few things, but there wasn't much else the administration could have done with the system and Congress they had at the time. End parentheses. Again, I could quibble with this, but that's not part of my agenda now, remember? When people wonder why Biden's candidacy of restoration doesn't appeal, it makes sense. Same with Bloomberg and Pete, who both represent an ideology that pairs social liberalism with minor tweaks to the status quo. Democrats have been trying that for decades with little success. Young people, specifically college-educated ones, are ready for a big change. It seems like the plurality of the Democratic Party is as well. Polls suggest otherwise for a nation as a whole. And people of color, long accustomed to only marginal improvements, seem skeptical. And regardless of the outcome of the election, this anger will continue to boil until these crises are addressed in significant ways. A sizable chunk of the Democratic electorate won't accept half measures. What that means, the future of democracy or capitalism, is hard to say. With that in mind, the appeal of Sanders is understandable, maybe even reasonable. That's why he should probably be favored to win the Democratic nomination. And the sooner the rest of the party and the elite comes to grips with what has inspired Sanderism, the better we'll be. One thing I neglected to mention explicitly is that some of this anger is driven by the failure to hold any elites accountable for all their failures. And then he goes on to read a quote from Sanders going after that dynamic with, "I welcome the hatred of crooks who destroyed our economy," et cetera, et cetera. And the last thing he says, "I should note that my father was very upset about all of this. Tried to cut me off multiple times and said, we don't have to talk about this right now." He's pathologically conflict averse and, like much of his generation, refuses to see his role in any of this. My experience is, you do it, they try and cut you off, you say your piece, and that's it. But I mean,
don't expect any change in the moment.
Never, ever, ever. I would say that of just about everybody, whether you're talking to your 5-year-old, your 14-year-old, your 75-year-old, whatever it is, or, you know, your husband, your wife.
My friends did convince one person to vote for Bernie when they were canvassing, and he told them that, like, explicitly. Doesn't happen that much, but it's cool.
Yeah, and I this thing, I mean, we will put a link to it in the podcast description, because I think this is someone coming from who's, you know, a little more towards the center from where I'm coming from and where from maybe some of you are coming from. But I would imagine he's also right up the alley of where some of our listeners are. And certainly the way that he's talking to his father in this case, I think is really important. And again, it's very hard, I think, for people of that generation and to a certain extent of my generation. I am not a boomer, contrary to popular opinion and aspiration.
Okay, boomer.
Which is exactly what a boomer would say. Nobody wants to feel like, oh, we messed up everything forever. Like we were too lazy or self-involved or too greedy as a generation or as an individual to do anything about it. And so we're either going to be in denial about it, or we're going to say you're just kids are being kids or whatnot. But the reality is the situation is fundamentally different, at least in terms of the trajectory of the United States. You know, we haven't had a generation that's going to do worse than their parents.
Well, and
at least not in the modern era. And
well, I think we also need to bring a class analysis into this. I remember reading a statistic saying that part of the reason that older people tend to be more conservative now is because the ones who survived into old age were more likely to have money than the ones who didn't, and more likely to have, well, I guess we all have Medicare now, but you know, and that made a lot of sense. Also, I think
the actuarial charts, life expectancy has increased by something like 10 years for people in the top half of the income distribution. In the bottom half of the income distribution, it has gone up. And I'm talking 10, 15 years since Social Security was implemented. For the bottom half, maybe a year and a half.
It's an electoral advantage.
And I've often said that boomer hatred is the class hatred of fools, because there are plenty of old people who are struggling and who should be receptive to Bernie's message, certainly. There are also plenty of old people who aren't struggling now but could still benefit from something like long-term care. But if you want to talk about the generations historically, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, how the welfare state is kind of a victim of its own success. If you want to talk about the New Deal and the Great Society, these programs created a middle class in this country, especially for white people, more for white people than for others. And they hid the wheels of policy so well that these people believed that they did it all on their own. And then that leads to more conservative politics where people are like, well, I pulled myself up by my bootstraps. Why can't you?
I mean, it's not just
people
the New
should
deal.
Check out an interview I did years ago now with, I think it's Susan Mettler, called The Submerged State, where that dynamic that Jamie's talking about, people not being aware of how much government largesse they get, is a problem. And
how about like European immigration, like sort of policies throughout American history, right? Like that's a subsidy toward every white person.
Indeed.
Yeah,
indeed.
And it's tied in with race as well, because Black Americans did not benefit from these home ownership programs in the same way because of redlining.
Absolutely. In fact, it was even more aggressive than that. The redlining was not even by the banks. There were programs instituted by the FHA that said explicitly, Covenants, Levittown, that specifically said can't sell to Black people. but yeah, this is a problem. But I think also, you know, part of it is the way, I don't know how you reach these people other than maybe you talk about things like climate, you talk about lack of opportunities for people and pull on their heartstrings. You're not going to win. Listen, you're not going to win the vast majority of these things. You know, the idea is to mitigate that chasm.
Oh, well, for even middle class people who are doing very well, lack of coverage for long term care at the end of their lives could really sap the fortune that they're leaving behind to their kids. So maybe you can personalize it like that.
Yeah, that's true, too. Unless you are super, super wealthy. The toughest place to be is being like moderately wealthy or middle class, because then what you need to do is you go into long-term care and you have to spend down $12,000 a month until you have virtually nothing. It depends on state to state as to when you become eligible for Medicaid, but virtually nothing. So unless you have bought long-term long-term care insurance, which is enormously expensive, and you know, like I may be ineligible at this age to even get it, you need to spend everything down to be. But 2/3 of our elderly who are in nursing homes are there, being paid for by Medicaid. So
Medicare.
Medicaid.
Ah.
Medicaid, because you need to spend down. You need to spend down to basically where you're living, where your income is sub-poverty levels. And all your assets add up to about, you know, again, it depends on state to state, to about $2,000. And then you're eligible for Medicaid in these nursing homes. Medicare does not cover nursing
homes. That's crazy.
It's nuts.
I feel like one more way to talk to older people about this is to hold grandkids over their heads. Or even if they're not your parents or grandparents, like, you can still say, and I'm being honest when I say this, I will be a lot more likely to have children and, you know, keep the human race going if we have a welfare state.
There you go.
And they understand that a lot of the time, I think. I hope. 'Cause right now, like, I don't know how I could do it.
There you go. Leverage the grandkids. Folks, with that said, we're going to head into the fun half, where things are going to get a lot funner. Just a reminder, your support makes this show possible. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the free half free of commercials, you also get the fun half. And we're starting to put video up for our members. We're going to be doing that more and more as we build out capacity here. All sorts of tiny little bonus stuff. I mean, it's great. Become a member today. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Sign up for the AM Quickie. The AM Quickie, the number of subscribers has jumped by almost 20%. In the past 4 weeks. And it's a great way. You want to catch up on the news from the last week? You want to get, like, if you're out of the news for a couple of days, go back and listen to the Quickie. It takes about 5 to maybe now 8 minutes. We're trying to get it back down to 7 or 6, Brendan. Very quick. In fact, you speed it up. It goes quicker. But and if you want to hear me talk quickly, this is the thing to listen to. A lot of people complain about my ahs and my ums and that I'm too slow and I'm thinking about things. You're going to enjoy this because I'm reading and I'm going fast. So I can do it. I just don't like to. check it out, amquickie.com. Also, check out Nomiki Kant's new show. You can go to patreon.com, The Nomiki Show. And Noam McKee, I think, is going to be joining us for the debate tomorrow night. We're going to be covering the debate live. We have a show tomorrow, obviously. Michael will be here. TMBS is tonight. So check out the Michael Brooks Show, patreon.com/TMBS. And you can see on YouTube live tonight, youtube.com/The Michael Brooks Show. Jamie, you're back.
Here I am. Oh, yes. This week on the Antifada, or I guess it's last week now because we weren't here last week, I speak with Faye Eckler, the vice president and co-founder of the Socialist Rifle Association, about what the proper socialist take is on gun control, why it's good to have an armed left, and much, much more. Also coming out this week, I have on Heather Fortune, who is the front woman from Wax Idols and is a solo artist now. And we talk about a little bit about music.
Is that a band?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're great. Check them out if you like really good post-punk music that's like sad and dancey at the same time.
Yeah, I do.
All right. Where was I? Oh, yes. We went to New Hampshire together. We talk about our trip. We talk about how capitalism is ruining music. And a lot of other stuff. I recorded it a while ago. I'm not sure. Patreon.com/TheAntifada.
Matt.
Yeah, folks, check out Literary Hangover, my podcast, where the most recent episode we talk about the history of Colonel Nathaniel Bacon's Rebellion by Ebenezer Cook. It's a poem that's about the rebellion. You should know about Bacon's Rebellion. That's all I'll say for today. Check it out.
All right. Fair enough. See you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back, back, back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back. Back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Almost says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ the Anarchy song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ the Anarchy.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck! Fuck! Reminder!
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are
psych. Fuck them. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Homo says what?
What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What?
What? What? What?
What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What?
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle.
Come on! Fuck them! Fuck them! Fuck them! Fuck them! Fuck, fuck, fuck.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black.
Come on.
What?
Come on.
What?
Come on. Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy, 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 pussy.